Many years ago, I took a trip to northern Argentina, where I stayed in a hotel that had a view just over the Paraná River into both Brazil and Paraguay. I thought, correctly, as it turned out, that this would probably be the only time in my life when I could go to Paraguay, even if it was just for a day. So I paid a taxi driver to drive me there. We didn't even slow down when coming to the border. We just blew across it. But the sleeping border guard didn't seem to mind much. I don't remember very much about where I went that day in Ciudad del Este, Paraguay. What I do remember is seeing what was more or less a parade of electronic equipment being smuggled into Brazil. It was both brazen and obvious. The question, though, was why? When I got back to my job at CIA headquarters, I mentioned what I had seen to a colleague. He laughed, and he said, "That's how Hezbollah makes its money. There's a huge Lebanese community in Ciudad del Este. They smuggle electronics to Brazil, and then they send the profits to Hezbollah." It had never even occurred to me. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Most in the media, in the think tanks, and even in Hollywood focus on terrorist operations, on capabilities, and on strategy. Where will the next attack be? How many rockets does a terrorist group have? Can they build bombs? Where are their cells located? Can they get onto an airplane? Not much thought, though, is normally given to something that is at least as important, and that is terrorist financing. I'm not talking about the work of Treasury Department or Finance Ministry bureaucrats and accountants planning future sanctions. I'm talking about how terrorist groups around the world pay for their weapons, explosives, ammunition, training, housing, even their travel. I'm talking about how they raise and transfer money. Money is the lifeblood of terrorist groups. It's money that allows them to launch everything from attacks to propaganda campaigns. The conventional wisdom is that in today's world, it's extremely difficult to launder money or to pay cash for anything of any real value without it coming to the attention of a government. But it happens. It happens every single day. Osama bin Laden managed to assemble an entire army, mostly under the radar. Hezbollah is one of the best financed and best armed terrorist groups in the world. How does that happen? It takes a special person to develop expertise in terrorist financing. It takes a person who is not afraid to confront the details. And it takes a person who will be committed to the issue over the long haul. We're very fortunate to have that expert with us today. Loretta Napoleoni holds a master's degree in philosophy and a master's degree in terrorism studies from the London School of Economics. She also has a PhD in the field. She was a Fulbright Scholar at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, D.C. Following a career in banking, Loretta went into journalism, publishing her work in newspapers all across Europe. She's now chairperson of the Club de Madrid. That's a group studying terrorist financing. She's the author of 11 books on the subject, including her latest called Techno-Capitalism. Loretta Napoleoni, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Loretta, you have devoted much of your adult life to finding and to countering money laundering and terrorist financing. You've advised governments and heads of state from around the world. You've written about the subject and you've appeared on virtually every important news network in the world. Can you explain to us why the measures that have been taken by world leaders and their governments have not been enough to stop terrorist financing?
Well, I would say that the first reason is that this measure changed from country to country. I mean, terrorism is a global phenomenon. In fact, I think it's one of the most globalized illegal activities that were seen since, you know, the fall of the Berlin Wall. And the policy that have been put in play to counter terrorist financing and also to mitigate terrorists, the impact of terrorist activity, or even to eradicate terrorism, have not been put in place everywhere or in the same way or with the same intensity. So there is an approach, a global approach, which is not as strong as it is required. So this is, you know, the first reason. The other reason is that, terrorism is very much, part of our life, has been with us right from the beginning. Terrorists believe that they're freedom fighters, so they want to change existing regimes. They work together with criminal organization, and criminal organization are deep rooted in any society. So it is a problem that I'm afraid we will never solve completely. Now, we can mitigate it. We can reduce the impact, but dreaming of a solution to terrorism, I'm afraid, is a dream that will never come true.
How much of an actual problem is this on a global scale? With the post-9/11 changes in place in international finance, is it possible for terrorist groups to finance their operations on a grand scale?
Okay, so 9/11 was, I would say, it was one-off, meaning it was an event that took place at a certain point in history because of a series of circumstances. If you think about that, the hijackers were funded with transfer of money taking place through normal banking channels, that they obtain visa to enter the United States, most of them through Saudi Arabia on a speedy procedure. Now, all of that took place at the time in which nobody could have predicted or could have expected an event like that to take place. Think about getting on a plane without being checked. I mean, this is impossible. It's never going to happen again. But that doesn't mean that terrorism does not pose the same kind of threat that it did with 9/11. I mean, look what happened with the 7 October attack by Hamas in Israel. I mean, the retaliation from Israel is very similar to what the United States has done after 9/11. Now, that is generally what inflates people that support, or people that sympathize with certain cause. So we will see the consequences in the years to come. So from that point of view, I would say that it's still possible to create the same kind of chaos at global level, or at least at international level. And also it is possible through this kind of event, exceptional event, to convince people to join in the fight, because the illusion that these kind of attacks project, it is that it is possible to achieve the goal of terrorism. So in the case of Al-Qaeda, as we all know, was the distraction of the United States as an economic superpower. So the attack towards the faraway enemy, in order to stop the faraway enemy from financing and supporting the near enemy, which were, the corrupted Arab regimes of the various countries from where, the members of Al-Qaeda came from. So the same thing we can, then say could happen now after, October the 7th. Now, of course, it is an illusion, because we don't have any proof that in history this kind of event have really changed existing regimes, unless, of course, they are followed by an uprising, which is a popular uprising. Now, we have not seen this happening in the Arab world after 9/11, and we're not going to see that happening in the Arab world after October 7. But nevertheless, there is this idea, there is this illusion, and that is what we should really be concentrating on if we want really to mitigate and also to reduce the power of terrorist organizations.
I read recently that virtually the only way left to launder money on a large scale is through the purchase of real estate, fine art, and racehorses. I don't fully understand that. Can you explain?
Yes, of course. We've seen many cases in recent years. People buying, for example, property in Spain, in southern on the Mediterranean shores of Spain, Portugal, also the southern of Italy, and they use this kind of activity to launder money. Now you may ask, how is this possible? Because I mean, can people actually carry suitcases full of cash and somebody accept them? Well, actually, yes. I mean, most of the money laundering that is taking place today, as it was in the past, by the way, as it was in the past, takes place in cash and takes place with bulk shipment, because we're talking about large amount of money. I mean, I give you an example. I actually came across a situation like this in Argentina. So people in the United States want to buy property in Buenos Aires because they want to have a place to go during the summer months or whatever, but they can't really bring the money in so easily in order then to take them out because there are monetary restrictions. So what did they do? They arrange for people that they know to do the exchange. So let's say you are a resident of Buenos Aires, you are a professional, and you want to send your children to school in the United States, and you have to pay the fees in US dollars. So instead of doing the transfer of money, which of course will be taxed and also regulated, at least until recently, what you do is you get into an arrangement with somebody in the United States, and you will provide money in Buenos Aires to buy an apartment for this person, and in exchange, this person will pay the fees of your children that are going to university. Now, this is a very, very, I would say, middle class level, and it happens all the time. Now, do people know that by doing that, they may get involved with money laundering? I think lots of people don't, but this is a very, very easy way to overcome restriction on both sides through this kind of connection. So, how do you stop something like that? You see, in order to stop something like that, what you need is to educate people, to teach them that by doing that, by behaving in this way, they're actually, breaking the law, but also they are supporting an illegal activity. This is just one of the many examples. And then, of course, you also have, the art world. The same trick can be applied, to the art world. If you are buying something which is very expensive, if you're buying a Picasso or a Miro, that's going to be very difficult. But if you buy, let's say, a middle to lower size artist, which is not very well known, it is and you, it doesn't require a lot of money, then yes, you can easily do something like that. And you say, well, how do they launder millions and millions, hundreds of millions by doing that? It just repeat the same operation over and over again. I mean, there's plenty of people who are willing to get into this kind of activity.
Loretta Napoleone, internationally recognized expert on terrorist financing, thank you for speaking with us, but don't go away. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation and ask her about the methods by which terrorists are prevented from financing and how they must constantly change. Stay tuned.
Joe Biden's White House continues to insist it has little leverage over the Israeli government to bring a halt to the fighting in Gaza or Lebanon. This is obviously an absurd claim. At the same time, it appears the U.S. has resigned to a wider conflict that includes Lebanon and beyond.
Known in Vietnam as the American War, the Vietnam War lasted for almost two decades and dragged in numerous countries.
Nhưng mà người cầm đầu của Mỹ nói rằng sang Việt Nam là như thế giúp Việt Nam. Và thì còn anh em thì không thống kê được.
Hundreds of thousands of American troops were sent to the country to back the South Vietnamese army.
Má bay rồi nó xả. Xóa trong đây đâu có biết cái chất tập tiên, không biết cái tập tiên mà ta này mới biết, ta này ra nói là đó là chất tập quá à.
American soldiers murdered resistors mercilessly, burned down entire villages and spread dangerous chemicals.
Cần nghĩ lại những người Mỹ, những người lính Mỹ rất trẻ và họ nhận thức không.
Did the Americans ever fully acknowledge what they did? And are the Vietnamese veterans ready to forgive?
Chẳng nhận là gia đình chúng tôi bắt mất trong chiến tranh, mà cả quê hương đất nước cũng bị mất mất trong cái sự đau thương của gia Mỹ.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with author, journalist, and terrorist financing expert Loretta Napoleone. Loretta, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you.
Loretta, I spent 15 years in the CIA working on counterterrorism, followed by 2 years as the chief investigator at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I remember very well how complicated tracking terrorist money was. And I remember how so many big, important international banks found themselves involved. It was probably inadvertent, but there was also an element of bank leaders being blinded by greed. That's what caused them to look the other way for far too long. Has this been your experience? And if so, has that changed?
Yes, absolutely. It has been my experience also. Things have changed, significantly after 9/11 because of, you know, the banking regulation. It is not as easy as it was in the past. Does it still take place? I'm afraid yes. There's another element, of course, that has come into the equation in recent year, and this is cryptocurrencies. Now, Bitcoin is very much a currency that is tracked at every single step. Now, initially, Bitcoin was used by criminal organization on the dark net. It was also used for money laundering, but that has stopped because now it is clear that you can track every single step of the Bitcoin blockchain. And eventually, when you go and exchange the Bitcoin for, you know, real money, which can be any currencies, this is when the mechanism of investigation actually can block you. We have several cases we've seen in recent year where, you know, people were laundering billions and they were, you know, discovered. Actually, it was the FBI that did the first major breakthrough with Bitcoins. But Bitcoin is just one of the many, many, many cryptocurrencies. Some of these cryptocurrencies are like monopoly money. They're just being created out of, you know, the success of certain organization which have put up, you know, web pages or that they sell certain kind of services on the internet. So through that kind of cryptocurrency, it is possible to launder money because there is no control, because, you know, there is no, it's impossible to patrol every single transaction without the blockchain, which of course is typical only of the Bitcoin. Now, the banking system doesn't deal openly in Bitcoin, although, you know, now Bitcoin is part of the financial industry, let's say, in the United States. So technically speaking, you could, through Bitcoin, still do this kind of activity, although, you know, it's, I haven't seen it anyway. I mean, criminal organizations are not relying on Bitcoin. And then, you know, there are many other ways. There is the informal banking system, for example, not necessarily only the hawala, but also the informal banking system, which is used in China. I mean, the Chinese do lend each other money through an informal banking system, and often this system is based upon a large family. So if you really want to money launder through channels, which are either the banking system or, you know, the informal banking system, you can still do it. But you have to be more careful than you were before.
I actually wanted to ask you about that specifically. I did an investigation more than a decade ago for John Kerry when he was the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I went to the Middle East and I was able to transfer, just as a test, $50 to myself through something called a hawala. I went to a small shop in Abu Dhabi. I gave a man $50. He gave me a very long number by which to later claim the money. And when I got home to Washington, I went to an Arab bakery. I gave the man there my number and I got my $50 back. This was very small stakes, of course, but are these hawalas used to finance terrorist groups? And if so, what can be done to regulate them?
Oh, of course, there is the hawala is used for terrorist financing. I mean, it's not. I mean, it's not that the hawala system is controlled by terrorist organization, absolutely not. But, you know, the hawala system is so huge. It's all over the world. It's, you know, it's a super global system. It's actually very cheap in comparison to other systems of transfer, like, you know, Western Union, for example. It's very quick. You can do, I mean, you must have experienced that. It's also linked to gold. So the reserves of the hawala are actually in gold. So you can even transfer gold instead of, you know, transferring money. It is possible to do that. And that may be actually a good way to avoid controls, because, I mean, gold is, yes, it is tangible, but it's very difficult to trace it. So the hawala is, oh, the other advantage of the hawala is that it goes everywhere. So you can find an hawala door, so somebody that can transfer the money and give you the money everywhere in the world. So, you know, you can be up in the mountains in Pakistan and use the hawala. Now, the use of the hawala, I would say, in terms of terrorist financing, is at micro level. So you get small donations, for example. So we're not seeing, you know, Saudi Arabia, for example. I mean, anybody who's sponsoring armed organization from Saudi Arabia is not going to use their hawala. It's going to use other means, bulk shipment of cash being the most used and the preferable one. But at global level, the sympathizer, the people in the world who actually look at that group, that arms organization that they believe is fighting for the freedom of the region. I specify that, the freedom of the region, because most of the people that actually are sponsoring in this way are people that have no idea of what a terrorist organization is. They really do believe that the group they are funding is a group who is fighting for the freedom of their own people. So these kind of individual all over the world, you know, use the Hawala to fund their various organizations, as they use the Hawala also to fund charities that do a good job in their region.
What's the next financing battlefield, Loretta? Do governments still have to worry about the banks? Can money still be transferred on a large scale? And how must strategies change in order to keep up with the terrorists?
I think we're already in the next financial field. The new frontier is actually cyber terrorism. There's very little is reported about that. So many companies do not report that they have been hacked by organizations that require payment of ransom. Ransom is today ransom of hostages also, but particularly I would say ransom of cyber attacks is one of the most important source of terrorist financing, and we know very little about that. So imagine a big organization, a big corporation that gets hacked, and they with ransomware, and they ask for payment of $200 million. I mean, that organization will pay as quickly as possibly can, so that nobody would know that it's been hacked. Because, you know, if the news that you've been hacked comes out, then the reputation of this organization is going to be damaged. And there is no way that you can protect 100% yourself from this kind of attacks. So hacking is the new frontier. And perhaps this is why we haven't seen a lot of financial activity for terrorist financing in other fields, because it all takes place in the darkness of the internet.
Loretta, that was absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, John. It was a pleasure. Yes.
All of us have been affected by terrorism in one way or another, whether it's Americans arriving for a normal day's work on the morning of September 11th, 2001, Russians gathering in a theater to listen to some music earlier this year, or anybody else in any of the world's countries. Terrorism, of course, can never be accepted, never. Under any circumstances, it's up to us to fight together with methods that do not compromise our respect for the rule of law and for human rights. That's why we owe such a debt of gratitude to people like Loretta Napoleoni. I know that I, for one, am indebted. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. Please follow me on Substack at John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.